fellas. See you in 8 months.
Toodaloo.
Later, boys.
8 months?
Yeah, we're shipping out in the morning.
Golly, 8 months without a dame.
Can you beat it?
You're gonna have to beat it.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm here. I arrived back home 7 minutes ago. 8 minutes ago.
Okay.
And my throat hurts from shouting at people at a loud restaurant.
Why? Oh, the loud restaurant. Oh, it's unfortunate.
Yeah. Also, I'm an old man, and probably from all of the loud music, but I can't hear myself talk very well, so I talk extra loud when it's a little bit loud, and then my throat gets all screwed up because I yell at people.
Oh.
I'm that awkward guy that yells at people at a restaurant or bar or a party or something. I don't go to parties.
I mean, I wasn't going to say anything, but the few times that we've been around one another in person, I felt like you could take it down a notch.
I'm very loud. Yeah, but no, it's because I can't hear myself. It honestly is.
Mm-hmm. Were you near an explosion or just many years of the glam rock concert scene?
It was the glam rock concert scene, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that, and then headphones and stuff.
Oh, were you listening to Limp Bizkit a little too loud?
No, sorry, I just turned on the live thing.
Mm-hmm.
No, not the Limp Bizkit.
Oh, okay.
Various other metallic type musics.
Like Metallica?
No, I was never really a fan of Metallica.
No, neither was I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
No.
Anyway, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm just chilling like a villain. I made sure to prepare for this evening for discussing this movie I haven't seen before. So I made a kale Caesar salad.
Is that how you prepare for this movie?
Yeah, kale Caesar.
Kale wasn't a big vegetable in the 50s or whenever this movie is ostensibly supposed to take place.
Well, this movie isn't real, so I don't really care.
It's very real. I watched it on the TV.
Well, the movies within the movie are not real. The events contained within this picture are not real.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you
enjoy said event?
You know, overall, I have to say this wasn't as bad as I had feared.
You always come in with such low expectations.
Well, I will be honest. I have not heard great things going into this from the people who are
fairly mixed.
Yeah, who even the Coen fans, the Coen heads, as I call them. It's a Coen heads, nothing. Okay.
It's like Coen heads.
Yes, there you go.
The Coen heads.
Yes.
They didn't make that movie, I don't think.
No, thank God. But they have sort of a mixed output, and even the fans, even the most diehard fans, were like, yeah, this one's not amazing. So, you know, I was reserved going in.
Yeah, I heard mixed reviews, I guess.
Did you see it in the theaters? Did you run out and see it?
No. I felt like it was one of those ones. There was a period of time where I missed a lot of movies in the theaters, but I kind of wanted to see this one in the theater, but it inevitably just slipped right past. And then now it's on HBO, so I watched it on the HBO. Well, I saw it, I don't know, a month or two ago, and then I kept caught bits and pieces here and there as I do because I watched the TV and what's on the TV.
And then
I watched it again for the first time all the way through again tonight in a while. And it's a good movie. I enjoy it.
The way you watch movies is, I just can't do it. I mean, I can do it when it's like a bad movie or it's something that's just on regular cable television and it's the year 2004. But like nowadays, if I know that I can just pop right over to an on-demand service and have at it, I'd much rather do that. Although
I don't watch it for the first time, like from the middle on TV.
Okay.
Usually I'll DVR it because there'll be another showing on the West Coast version of that channel in like 2 hours.
Life hack. See, with this one, I watched it because you had recommended it. Apparently there was a reference that you were making, would that it were so simple. And I was like, this went over my head. I don't understand it. And then after seeing the film, I was like, oh, That's why that's funny. Because I will say that that scene in particular is funny, and that it represents many of the funny little vignettes that pop up here and there throughout the picture. But overall, I don't feel like this holds together particularly well, and I feel like there's a lot of stuff that leaves me scratching my head as to why it's there. Francis McDormand, hello.
Well, that was a fun scene, but I will tell you that this does benefit from a second viewing, particularly because, you know, they're fast talking studio folk, and remembering the names and putting things together is not easy on the first viewing, especially when they mumble names and stuff like that. But it's a fun satire about the studio system in the 50s and this, you know, Hollywood fixer character Eddie Maddox, and you know, sort of the day in his life kind of thing, and it's an amusing satire in and of itself, and then it does some fun stuff sort of just playing in that world, and it's Coen-y. But yeah, in terms of like story, it's just kind of like, you know, the arc of Eddie Maddox is pretty minimal in terms of where he starts and where he ends up, but it's still fun to play in all of these little vignettes and all these different sorts of, you know, 1950s era Hollywood kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think it does an interesting job of balancing the glamour and the nostalgia for the period with some of the realities of the fact that they were mass producing schlock.
Yeah, it's manufactured glamour. That's basically the whole idea of his job, is, you know, keep a lid on the bad press and make sure that the ridiculous studio system makes it through a day without falling on its face.
Yeah, and that certainly comes through. And also there are there's some fun jabs played at the anxieties of the era, including an unexpected an unexpected thing about communism and the Soviets that kind of grew as the picture went on, to the point where Dolph Lundgren is a submarine captain on a submarine that comes up in Malibu.
Was that him playing the captain?
Apparently, because I noticed him in the credits and I was like, wait, did I miss a line? Did he like, and I rewound and I watched it again and I was just like, no, he's there, but that's it.
He's just a shadowy figure on top of a Russian submarine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he had like some lines or something with Channing Tatum that were cut or something, but it was a bit peculiar.
He's probably just a big name, so they had to give him a credit.
Yeah, just like Christopher Lambert. Which was also, it was hilarious. Hello, Highlander. And Clancy Brown appear in the same picture again.
Yeah, the Highlander, I've seen this 2.5-ish times now. I still don't know what half of the lines he said were.
Yeah, no, I have no idea. And that's, I think just some of the weird casting is delightful. There are many of the parts where I was like, oh, I hope I get to see Robert Picardo come back again later on in the picture. And it was just like, nope. That's all the Robert Picardo you're going to get.
Who's Robert Picardo?
He was playing the rabbi at the meeting at the beginning of the film.
Oh, yeah, he was good.
Yeah, he played the emergency medical hologram on Star Trek Voyager. And then
he was
a recurring character, Richard Woolsey, on Stargate SG-1, and then its spin-off shows. So,
mm-hmm. You know,
there's that.
I also liked, I can never remember the guy's name. He played one of the writers who was standing in the back and just shouting things every now and then, and he would get yelled at.
Oh,
what is that actor's name?
It's that Serenity guy, the Serenity hacker guy. What's his name?
Serenity hacker guy?
David Krumholtz. Is that who you're thinking of? The one who could...
I don't know.
Okay, well, that does me no good.
I'm scrolling through photos. I'm looking on the IMDb.
Okay. Well, anyway, there's also Tilda Swinton, who...
Times two.
Who gets twice as much screen time as I had expected.
David Krumholtz. That's totally him.
Yeah. There's Fisher Stevens, which I was just like, oh, hello. How are you? strange to see you here. And there's even stuff like Newman.
I love his cameo. It's so great. He plays such a sweaty, creepy weirdo in this movie so well.
Oh, he does a fantastic job. And he's playing off of his co-conspirator, who is an actor that I mostly know from a web series called The Guild, with Felicia Day. And he just has this very intense, bewildered look about him the whole entire time, where they're trying to pull off the poisoning in front of like everyone, which has some interesting staging. And Allison Pill has a very brief moment as the wife, and I was just like, where do
oh,
I
yeah,
know
that's
her?
That's right.
Yeah, and I was like, where do I know her from? And I was like, oh, her until she was with Tilda Swinton in Snowpiercer. She was the pregnant teacher. So. That's what I mostly remember her from.
She's also Scott Pilgrim, isn't she? Isn't she the drummer?
Yes.
We Are Sex Bomb, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yes.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yes, that's a better movie.
Than Snowpiercer?
Yeah.
I think a lot of things are better than Snowpiercer.
Well, as we establish, I hate Snowpiercer. Don't listen to that episode of this podcast.
Yeah, the only people who like Snowpiercer are terrible people.
Remember it's all the critical amazing reaction to it? Anyway, so...
No, I don't remember critics. I remember a lot of really really serious people on Twitter talking about how much they love Snowpiercer. Mm-hmm.
Shoe in your head. Jonah Hill, it plays the least...
Great role.
The least annoying Jonah Hill character I've ever seen, because he just sits there and deadpans, and that's it.
And he stamps, and he notarizes.
Mm-hmm.
He's bonded.
Yes.
I love his bonded character, man. Too.
Yeah, and you have Ralph Fiennes turning in a pitch-perfect performance as this incredibly uptight director. And I thought that was
Lawrence Lorenz.
It was a fantastic use of him. And then you had some newcomers that were mixed in, like Alden Ehrenreich. Is that how you say his name? He asks timidly. With a question mark.
Is that Hobie Doyle?
Yes.
Yeah, he's been in one or two things, and I was not familiar with him prior to seeing this. But Alden, I...
Yeah, let's just call him Hobie. Hobie did a good job.
Hobart yes. Doyle. he's great.
I thought that he pulled that character off quite well. And there is, of course, the weird turn of Michael Gambon as the narrator, which I had not expected. And I was just sitting there like, is Michael Gambon going to talk through this whole thing? And then, yep, he's the narrator of the whole picture. That's what we got. And there's other character actors sprinkled throughout, especially with the communist writers to round them out, and some others. So it's quite a cast, which I have to assume is part of a play off of the fact that that Hollywood is making epics in order to draw people to theaters, because people were worried about the studio system falling apart and TVs and stuff. So I think that's probably why there are so many people here to grab your eyeballs, to get you in seats. I do think I remember that being part of the advertising campaign, is look at all the stars we have. Meanwhile, when I saw that, I was like, oh no, that can't be good. And turns out,
well, I mean, that advertising also kind of works thematically with the idea that it's this like manufactured spectacle thing.
That's what I just said.
But yes.
Yeah. I mean, but unfortunately, I think some of that works against it. Like I said, I like when Robert Picardo is there and they have that scene at the beginning. I enjoy that. I enjoy the moments with Tilda Swinton and the tension that she brings to the life of our main protagonist. I enjoy the weird writer communist stuff to a certain point.
It's all just economics and the, you know, history and the future.
Yes. Parasites. You even have like some of the other things, like the vignettes you get of the pictures themselves, of the actual productions, because we sort of tune in to what that picture is. Like we are not just seeing the fringe edge pieces of this. We see a whole underwater swimming extravaganza that that unfolds with a lot of digital stuff, and then
I like the mechanical whale too.
Well, I mean, who doesn't like a good mechanical whale? And there's the dance number with the lack of dames lamenting the lack of dames.
There ain't gonna be a dame.
Yeah, no. By the end of that, where Channing Tatum's face is hovering over the posterior of somebody he's flipped upside down, I was just like, this is amazingly hilarious.
When he tries to like sneak out between the other two guys, and they're like backing up and sort of just like doing like a train car bumping into him, and he's stuck in between the butts.
Yes, it's funny. It is quite a hilarious little moment. And even if you are like oh, this is kind of schlocky at the beginning of it when he first starts doing the little soft shoe stuff, when that starts happening, and you're just like, oh, how long is this going to go on for? By the end of it, you're just like, this is amazing. I want more of this.
Keep going.
Yeah. That really won a lot of goodwill from me, seeing that.
Yeah, and I love how he uses the same jump on the ladder from the table move to jump from the boat to the ladder on the submarine. He like whips his hair back and puts the arm back out, and sort of the like pirouette movement.
Yeah, it was a pretty ridiculous maneuver. Wow. On top of everything else that was ridiculous about it, also just the way he was standing on the edge of the boat with his hair tussled and his gray trench coat with his dog and the crook of his arm as the submarine is coming up, it was just like, this is pretty ridiculous.
Well, that's the best part about that movie. And I was actually I read the there was a Variety interview with Roger Deakins about this, because you know it's cinematography Cohen thing. Anyway, he was talking about how they intentionally tried to make that one sort of as fake looking as possible, so it kind of looked like all of the previous movies that they were parodying. With, you know, I mean, it's very clearly like the water tank and the boat, and it's not moving, and just like the absurd submarine popping up out of the water. It's pretty great.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, look at the sky. No real sky looks like that, and I know that they know that. They did that on purpose. It looks
wonderful
like
clouds.
Yeah, it looks like a painted sky that you would see in a 1950s production.
And you get the little blinking light of the house all the way back there on the bluff. Malibu.
And
you should get a big house up on a cliff in Malibu.
Yeah, I feel like that's an easy thing to come by these days. It isn't.
Well, let me ask you this. Can you dance around in a sailor outfit?
Would that it were so simple.
Perfect answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would dance around in a sailor outfit for a house like that too.
Yeah. What is the price of this house? One sailor outfit dance.
One dance number in a sailor outfit is the cost.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, would that it were so simple indeed.
Twer. Why do you keep saying it that way?
With the, I just like he's got such a thick accent.
Oh, it is. I can't imagine standing next to Ralph Fiennes and trying to do that scene without laughing at the ridiculousness of it, because he is deadpan straight the whole entire time. He's absolutely serious about this. You know, give me a mirthless chuckle. Like it's. He means it. Like he really sells that performance as the director. So
yeah, and I love it when he gets down to the line reading. He's like, just copy me, and he's like, you know, he does like a hand movement, and then Hobie copies, and he's slapping his hand down like, no, stop doing that. Why are you doing that? Put your hand. What are you doing? Why are you making that? Why are you rolling your eyes? Like, well, you rolled your eyes. Like, no, just look forward, and just smacking him. And I especially love when they actually come back and he watches the dailies with Francis McDormand, the improvised line that they changed it to.
Mm-hmm. Complicated.
It's complicated. Yeah, because yeah. he can't say the line with this accent.
No, and you know, he made it work. And I also like the vignette that they have with his Carmen Miranda counterpart, where it's supposed to be a promotional thing for the picture that they have, pictures that each of them has to promote, so they're arranged on this date. So I thought that was kind of cute, but it felt like it was another movie from, like, many of these things feel like they're part of another movie, but that in particular was just like, okay, like, I'm not sure how that tied into everything else other than the fact that, Tilda Swinton shows up twice, and then we see Channing Tatum with the suitcase. But the sweetness of it, like, that could have been its own, you know, rom-com movie, just the two of them palling around. I think that, that might be a better way to look at it, is that it's not that I feel like the disjointedness of this really bothers me. It's just that I kind of wish I could see each of these little things, which I don't feel like stick well together, but could be their own films inside of this universe.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's partly there to illustrate one of the instances of the arranged relationship from the studio, you know, trying to rebrand her image or whatever. So they're giving her a boyfriend. But yeah, it is amusing how there's like these young, attractive performers that have been stuck together, and they've got this sort of very innocent outlook on the whole filmmaking process in the studio system. And then I especially love how Hobie Doyle becomes so serious when he finds out about the kidnapping and how he's helping out, and he's, you know, tracking down stuff and takes the car and follows up to Malibu. Like, it's a great character.
Yeah.
And he's just a simple fella who worked at a rodeo.
Yeah, and he's missing his teeth.
That part I could have done without.
Yeah.
particularly because the effects aren't, like, the greatest.
No.
But, yeah, it's creepy.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't got no teeth.
It's not that in particular bothers me. It's that her reaction is of one of entertainment,
hilarious amusement. Yeah,
yeah. It seems like maybe this is a weird thing for a first date. Not necessarily, you know, and not to ridicule people who have teeth problems, because I myself have some teeth problems. But I think that was sort of like a weird note that didn't ring 100% true in the context of their first date. Now, there was something I want to ask you about. There are a number of times when On Wings as Eagles is brought up through the course of the film. And I had no idea what was. I was like, did I miss something? Like, did they explain what this was that's hanging over his head? And nope, they just have it as this ominous MacGuffin through the whole run of the picture up until the very end, where one of the Tilda Swintons, I forget which one, I can't separate them.
I can barely separate either, but I do. Yeah. The Tilda Swinton gag is amusing in the sense that I believe, you know, one of them is a serious journalist and one of them is sort of just like a gossip columnist. And I think the gossip columnist has one more million readers than the regular one.
The regular one has 19,000 readers, and the gossip columnist has 20 million readers.
Oh, I thought it was 19 million and 20 million, but 19,000 and 20. Okay, that makes a difference then.
Yeah, at least that's my recollection. I could be misremembering it since I've only seen this film one time, but it felt like they were making a statement about the kind of real reporting she does versus the kind of gossip reporting that the other one does, and why one might be more interesting to people. I like her outfits and the wacky hats, but her accent kind of wandered all over the place. It was weird. On Wings as Eagles, one thing I could have done without would be the explanation of what it was, where it was sodomy. And for the era, I can understand that, you know, there were many scandals that were covered up by Hollywood. You know, you got your Rock Hudsons and et ceteras. That was like, oh, come on, guys. Fine.
And then when he recounts the story about, what was it, Joey Bishop or somebody wants him to shave his back or something?
Yeah, I don't remember the character's name. Yeah, it's the one, and then she says, oh, he's not in that picture. And it's like, well, who is this help? And it's like, that guy. And then
he's trying to make a comparison about politics, and that's all he can come up with.
Yeah, it was some communist theory that he was trying to use an analog from his own life, and it perplexed the professor he was talking to.
The Stanford professor, yeah. But no, you're right. The ostensibly Baird Whitlock, who was a very big star, to get his first role, slept with the director, but the director is Ralph Fiennes.
Yes, yes. It is Lawrence Lorenz. The current person is Channing Tatum
Protege, as he's referred.
Yes. It's a nice way of putting it. But now that he's defected, we do not use those terms. They're making this. He makes this connection and says, "Oh well, now that he's defected as a communist, if you come out, then I'll smear you as a communist and that you collaborated with him in order to get the story, and then nobody will ever print anything about you ever again." And it's like, oh, that's one way you could have tied this all together, I suppose. But oh well.
I mean, that's his job. He's there to deal and or muscle his way into whatever he's got to do to make the PR fly for the studio.
Yeah. Now, did his confessional moments, did they come across as cute and entertaining to you, or were they just like, I get that you're going for cute and entertaining, but this is kind of going on a while?
In the beginning, the first one is obviously a little more serious because you're not super familiar with the tone of the whole thing yet. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see this sort of like hardline moral 50s man kind of persona that he's trying to hold on to while he's doing this goofy job at the studio. But the second time around, you know, even when he opens the little sliding thing, even the priest says, ugh, like, because he, you know, it's been 27 hours since his last confession. It's like, enough already.
Yeah, that just felt a little stale for me.
I mean, it's, you know, it's funny. Like, where does he's out of the studio? Like, who does he have to confide in? Like, he's kind of out there on his own. And I guess part of that is, in my mind, is like this, like, Wild West of you know, studio production world where it's very new kind of corporation thing, and he's just kind of in charge of this mess of, you know, the way the Lockheed guy refers to it is just sort of like a circus. And he's like, well, yeah, I'm kind of wrangling animals at a circus or whatever, but this is my job, and I got to find a way to make it fit into this 1950s world, which is kind of ridiculous. And he's trying to hang on to his moral compass in spite of the things that he has to do. But I don't know. It's that part didn't really bother me that much, I guess.
Mm. Okay.
I was amused by the consultation of the four different religious leaders with regard to the Hail Caesar script.
Oh, yeah. No, I like that whole scene. Especially when the patriarch objects to leaping from one chariot to another. This is his first right, major yeah. objection.
Yeah, is the portrayal of Jesus realistic? He's like, how is he jumping from one chariot to the other? It's like, yeah, we'll look into that.
Yeah, and then the whole argument that erupts around that over whether or not, and all the stuff about like the Holy Trinity and et cetera, it's just like, oh, good.
There's division and unity and division.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I follow.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I somehow feel like we've discussed this film faster than I thought we were going to.
I guess. I mean, we haven't really talked about, I mean, there's kind of the other studio thing, which I guess is real. I don't know where I was reading this, Wikipedia or the review or something, but the Scarlett Johansson thing where she's
pregnant,
and she's going to adopt her own child, just disappear for a little while and then claim she's adopted it, and then she ends up marrying Jonah Hill, which is actually quite hilarious. Scarlett Johansson plays a pretty great role in this.
I like her. I like her really laying it on thick with that accent that she fashions for herself.
She's got moxie.
Yeah, she does.
Or something, one of those two.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like shooting this on film really lent a lot to what you observed?
Boy. We should put that Deacon's article in the show notes for people. Apparently they were adamant about shooting on a film because of the era and stuff. But apparently it was difficult because, you know, film was kind of dying and they had a couple of issues with it. But no, I don't think it needed to be shot on film. The lighting style in particular, though, is fascinating because it is very much that old school lighting style. And it's almost intangible, like trying to figure out how they got it to look that way. Like when they're shooting the Hobie Doyle little scene where he can't say his thing in that ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
The lighting is magnificent. It is like pitch perfect for the 1950s era stuff. And luckily there's a wide shot where you can sort of see where they just basically lined all three corners of the set with giant bright lights. And then there's, you know, big lights next to the camera, and that's that really high contrast ratio that they're exposing for makes it look great. But I don't know. I don't think there was any particular benefit to the film stock, particularly because, you know, things like highlights and skies and whatever were replaced. I mean, skies were replaced. The highlights were blown out as they should have been with that ridiculous high contrast ratio. But like, you know, I don't find that there was a benefit to film in this.
No. I mean, especially since it was digital intermediary anyways, for all the color correction stuff, it's like, okay, well,
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, that was the other thing he mentioned. Like, he didn't specifically say it, but he was, you know, Deakins mentioned that there isn't really much of the film infrastructure anymore, and you don't really have the post-processing options that you would have had back then. Like, film stock options, he said there's like five film stocks now, so you can't really, you know, play around with that to get a look. You can't really do, you know, the various Technicolor, bleach bypass, or whatever sort of post-processing stuff you want to do anymore. It's just like, well, you shot some film, and here's your negative, and now you're done. So, like, all of the futzing that they could have, you know, theoretically done at some point with the film to make it look more old school was just sort of, like, out of the question. So it's got to go through a DI, and, you know, to a certain extent, you don't have to be that faithful reproducing this with the camera and the stock and everything. You need to kind of make it look like the era. And, you know, like that hyper-saturated, like, orange look of everything is kind of great. Like, especially the, when he's watching the dailies of, Hail Caesar, when George Clooney's pushing his way through the crowd and he comes up to see Jesus, like, it's so like orange and oversaturated and ridiculous looking. It's just great.
Yeah. I do wish that when, they were watching the dailies and stuff that they had projected it though on set, because it kind of looks like you just put it in after. And especially with the first Hail Caesar dailies that he watches with the titles that are missing, you know, insert stuff here.
Yeah, I thought that was funny too.
Yeah, it was funny, except it didn't look projected. Yeah, it looked plug-ined. So I was kind of disappointed in that.
Well, I feel like all of the effects in this sort of
they're not
red cheesy for kind of, I don't know, hopefully on purpose.
Well, there's the cheesiness, but then there's also the fact that they're getting exactly what they are wanting in the romanticized sense of it, you know? Like, they wouldn't have had the whale blowhole stuff where it's like shooting up a camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would have either had to have been shot there and been imperfect, or wouldn't
just
have existed
or whatever.
Yeah. And so by cheating and sort of getting exactly what they wanted to have, then you have something that's a little too perfect, I think, for that. And I'm not sure if I should have used the word perfect, but something that's a little too crisp, shall we say.
I mean, the other thing is, trying to figure out like what exactly they were going for, like when the submarine resubmerges at the end there, like the water going back up over top of the submarine. And I think they do some of that stuff in the mermaid scene where they do the bubbles and the underwater look or whatever. Like I can't tell if it was a miniature when they resubmerged the submarine, or if it's just a really weird looking water sim.
It's the water sim.
Yeah, because it's very sort of like,
it looks like
it looks goopy.
Yeah, it's like a Jello shot that's partially coagulated,
but with bubbles in it, which I think mm-hmm. the bubbles are just composited particle system.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't like break the film or anything, but. Like, in terms of, like, oh, we needed to shoot this on film for authenticity, it's like, well, let's pause and think about the rest of that for a second.
I did love the movie Ola where they, you know, he was watching Hobie's scene and where she gets stuck in it. Like, it literally, it freezes and then the frame starts to burn through because it's sitting on top of the light. I thought that was great. And then even when he plays back through the second time, that frame is burnt.
I did not enjoy that scene because it felt so artificial, just in general, because we see her manipulating the film strips and her big floppy neckerchief tie thing, and as soon as you see her flopping that around before she puts the film strip in, it's just like, that's gonna go in the machine. And it did. And then she's choking. And that's it. But I guess, you know, you can't just have Frances McDormand just show up and not do anything other than play film. I mean, she is married to one of the Coens, so I guess technically they could have. But
I thought it was amusing.
Mm-hmm. I could have done without it, the whole thing, to be perfectly honest.
You got the edit room there. You got the moviola.
Mm-hmm.
I loved how she, like, you know, grabbed a strip of music to, like, sync up to it so he could watch it properly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do like that they gave the editing job to CeCe Calhoun, who happened to be a woman in the 50s editing. Like, I thought that was nice. So this is sort of a good reverse progressive fake reality thing that they did.
Yeah, I suppose. Plus, you know, she played the role well.
Yeah.
Just a cloud of smoke surrounding her.
I mean, I really like the secretary who I thought was pitch perfect as the secretary that he had. Heather Goldenhirsch. I don't remember seeing her in things, but she's been in a lot of movies that I've seen. So now I'm like, maybe I have seen her. Like, she was in School of Rock, apparently, and in Kinsey. And I'm like, I don't remember seeing her in either of those.
Who was she in School of Sheila? I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I have no idea. But anyway, that concludes that. And there's a lot of fake shots of the studio, which are like rows and rows and rows of sound stages. All
some of those are real. They shot at least a portion of it at Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I think, again, I can't remember which one of these articles I was reading, but they planned it properly, and then they moved a bunch of the campers and crap out of the way and reshot it, and it basically looked like it would have looked in the 50s because those stages have been there for a long time.
Yeah, except the rows and rows and rows, like big wide shot of the whole thing, that one.
Mm-hmm.
His little...
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I also like that he had the map of the studio behind him in his little office there.
Yeah, just in case he gets lost. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's not the worst Coen Brothers movie I've ever seen. It's not the best Coen Brothers movie I've ever seen. So,
I thought Josh Brolin was pretty great.
I did like Josh Brolin. I thought he was very good at being gruff, something that he is known for. I thought George Clooney was a little too hammy. I thought he was pitch perfect when he was in the film as Barrett Whitlock, but when he was just sort of a clueless doof, I feel like he was too clueless and too doof. it kind of was grating, especially in that last scene where he's talking to Josh Brolin about... all the great things about communism, and it's just like, you can't be this.
He's malleable. He's an actor, so he's easily influenced by whatever material. And
then I do like the way Josh Brolin plays off of that, in just sort of sitting there with his hand over his mouth, glaring at him the whole entire time.
And then he badmouths the studio and he slaps him around. I love that, you know, his last comment is go out there and be a star. And then he actually, you know, we get to see a glimpse of that when he does his little monologue there.
Messes up the last
cross
line.
Yeah, because, you know, at the beginning of the movie, they said they changed passion to faith. He's like, what happened? I liked passion.
Ardor.
And he gets tripped up on that last line. But it's great because, you know, it's a very impassioned performance, and all the crew starts to like, oh, wow, I'm going to tune in and actually listen to this. This is a great performance. Then he screws it up and like, oh, yeah, well, we'll do it again. Whatever. It's at the end of the day, you know, it's just he's an actor. He's going to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
It amused me. I especially like the bit where the AD was walking around and he asked the guy up on the cross what kind of breakfast he got, a hot breakfast or a box breakfast.
Why are you a principal or what was the other one?
Extra.
Yeah.
Principal or actor? I think I'm a principal. That's pretty great.
What'd you think of all the lingo, the two apple whatever, that stuff?
Oh, that's we totally still do that.
I've never been on a set.
You've never been on any set of any sort?
No, because I work in post production.
I gotta tell you though. I would have called cut a lot quicker when Hobie Doyle started screwing up his lines instead of just sitting there letting the film burn through. Like, all right, yeah, we'll cut there. Let's try that again. As soon as he went, ha! Would that it were so simple.
I did like that they went out to Vasquez Rocks to shoot the horse scene that we initially are introduced with him for that part.
And that how great was the horse before? He did like the flip off of the thing, and then he did the handstand and stuff. It was some pretty solid acrobats.
Yeah, when he jumped up and like hooked his legs over the tree stump to right. to flip around it. It was like, wow, I can't tell if I'm supposed to be actually pretending that that's real or if if that's the effect of what the film would look like if it were to be screened.
I like that, you know, they referred to the fellow they found to play Jesus, Nationwide Talent Search. Didn't they say they found him in Akron, Ohio?
Yep.
Yeah, you know who else from Akron, Ohio?
You.
I was going to say LeBron James, but yes, me too.
One of you is good enough to play Jesus, and the other one, not so much.
No, but I love, like, during his premiere, Hobie's like, well, they only gave me one shot at this song here. And it's like, it's a perfect song, especially for the movie in the era, and everyone's laughing at the fat guy jumping into the water trough trying to tackle the moon.
Because the scene isn't about his song. The scene is about the slapstick comedy.
Mm-hmm.
The broad comedy.
I just love how, you know, like, it's this idea that they found these like natural performers wherever they may find them, and they've sort of clamored and just stuck them all together and turned it into this weird, like, well, we can move this fellow over to that picture and we can do this over here and we'll just combine these things and we'll make a new permutation of the same thing we've been doing over and over again. It's like, you just find talented people and you stick them in and you just churn out the movies left and right until you can, you know, make as much money as humanly possible.
Yep.
I like it. It was amusing.
Yeah. I mean, it was a cute thing about it.
I wish I had a studio gig. I want to be Lawrence Lorenz where I can just, you know, make studio movies all day long.
You're picking Lawrence Lorenz?
Well, there wasn't really another director depicted.
There was Christopher Lambert.
The Highlander. Yeah, I want to be the Highlander guy.
Who was doing the Dames one? Who was the director for that one?
That was him, wasn't it?
Oh, I thought that was the other guy.
No, I don't think we saw. I don't know. We saw the fellow doing the mermaids was mm-hmm. the one who came in. Who's the one who got the ransom note? I don't remember who he was exactly. The Highlander was doing the
ransom note wasn't the mermaid guy. That was the guy from the picture because they were filming the brazier scene where they had to do it with the stunt double.
Was from Hail Caesar. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So I guess I don't know who was doing the mermaid bit. I did
like all the jokes about shooting around things because they couldn't stop production. So rewriting the line so that they didn't have to see that it was the stunt.
Right. It's, you know, and again, half of the stuff is still just like completely realistic production issues that you have to deal with. Like, you know, send the insert truck to New Mexico to film rain inserts for this other film while they're waiting on that stuff. And at the end there, it's still raining. It's like, well, we'll just, you know, shoot in the rain and we'll change the title of the movie or run it past the writer, something like that or whatever. But like all of the just, I mean, honestly, that's like half of the appeal of filmmaking in the first place for a lot of people is the like...
problem solving.
See to your pants problem solving that happens all the time. And it's just, it's, you know, you see the end product and people have no idea like what you had to do to get it there. And it's nothing like what you intended to do, but it, you know, it comes out and it's either good or bad or whatever. And sometimes it's an accident. Sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's amusing. Whoa.
Whoa.
It is really windy outside. I think a tree just fell.
Like for real?
Well, there's at least something banging against the side of the house. We'll figure out later.
All right, record it on your log,
Captain's log. One of our bushes got uprooted by a windstorm.
Oh well, no, then it wouldn't be a log because it would only be a log if it was a tree.
Oh dear God!
How did you not see that coming? Are you tired, Dan?
I mean, a little, but, you know, does anyone ever see a log coming? They roll fast.
Yeah. Rolls downstairs, rolls over in pairs, rolls over your neighbor's dog.
Yeah.
It's great for a snack. It fits on your back. It's log.
Ren and Stimpy.
It's better than bad. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loves Log. I am out of things to say about this film. I mean, I like the score by Carter Burwell, who I don't know who the other person was that I just pronounced their name of, but I like the score by Carter Burwell. I felt that was very appropriate, and he got to dabble in a bunch of genres to go along with what was happening on screen.
I paid no attention to the score. Did they do anything to sort of mix it up based on the different, like what was the Lawrence Lorenz scene score?
There was nothing for that. It was dead silence because it was an awkward set thing.
Mm. Well, but, I guess you ran some through during the playback.
Yeah, you got music during the aquatic number. You got the dames dance. You got the huge Soviet choir, Red October style.
Right.
Yeah.
Pretty great house too.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a mid-century modern look.
Yeah, it was a sweet pad. I like the production design detail of that too. There's like those little wood zigzags on the windows and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Waking up in the closet on the little lounge chair.
I like what woke him up was the vacuum just smacking into everything.
Yeah, I could have done without the third gag where he sat down and his sword poked him.
I feel like they should have done none of those gags.
I mean, maybe one.
Yeah. Well, you know, comedy is doing something three times, but unfortunately...
Is that how comedy works?
So supposedly.
Mm.
Yeah, three times. Yeah, no, it didn't. It did not pan out well, because, like I said, he was too much of a doof.
He was holding his two little cucumber finger sandwiches because he was just too utterly bewildered at ending up in the middle of this communist study session or whatever.
I like how that was staged, where he got a sandwich and then he hadn't even finished eating the other sandwich and he got another sandwich.
Yeah, and then the creepy guy from Girls took his picture and then wandered around and then took another picture or just kept making faces at him.
Yeah, that was also entertaining.
Alex Karpovsky.
If you say so.
That's apparently what his name is.
Okay.
He just made faces. It was weird.
Well, it's that kind of a movie, Dan.
I can only assume that has something to do with, you know, the history of trying to disseminate the information that Hollywood people are communists and stuff, and they're just going to use that evidence against him, but, you know, it seemed weird that it was there.
Yeah, and it didn't come up at all later, like when the police bust the place. Nothing happens.
Yeah, that's another thing it took me probably the second viewing to see, is because there's that very fast-talking scene where he's on his way, I think, to Frances McDormand, where they find the extras, but they don't know anything, but they kind of know where it is, so I guess they finally sweat him and figure out where that truck took George Clooney, so they call the police and send him up there to arrest all the writers, because you never really don't really circle back to the, you know, police investigation aspect of that.
No, because I believe the secretary is saying something like they found the guy who I take to be Newman, Wayne Knight, and that he doesn't know who it was, et cetera, but knows the vehicle. And then, so they're trying to get information about the vehicle, or whatever the guy's name is trying to get information about the vehicle and give it to the secretary. Yeah, like that connection was not clearly made, because at the end I was like, why are there police cars going there? Cause they didn't call.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, that I feel like that was tenuous.
They escaped just in time to avoid the PR disaster that would have been having Baird Whitlock at that place when the police showed up.
Well, it would have only been a PR disaster because of the circumstances of how he was being held, quote-unquote. Because if he had actually been kidnapped and was tied up or something, then yes. But the fact that he's just sort of wandering around like a doof.
He's drinking martini and eating olives just sitting in the middle of his living room.
Yeah, like if the police had walked in on that, they'd be like, so you are held captive? Question mark?
I also kind of liked the dropping the money into the ocean thing.
I had to go back and watch that scene again because I was like, why did he leave the dog? And then the dog came to him and it was like, oh, he didn't want the dog to come to him. The dog just missed him. And then he didn't want the dog to like jump into the water. So he tried to catch the dog and that's why he dropped it.
Mm-hmm. It's just funny because all of the writers, you know, they're complaining about being taken for granted and abused by the studio system. And, you know, I guess telling us why we're going to have a writers guild and stuff eventually. But, you know, they're in need of money or they want their extra money.
There was already a writers guild, Dan.
Oh, well, then I don't know what their deal is.
They're communist writers.
They're communist writers. They want more money.
Yeah. But the parasites. But
by the way, Wayne Knight's character, along with the other guy, their name is Lurking Extra, which is pretty great.
That's nice. They lurked.
Oh, you're supposed to be lounging with the, what is that instrument called?
The lyre.
Lounging with the lounge. What are you doing? Stop sitting like that. Lounge.
Yeah.
And get smacked in the face with the scabbard.
Yeah. Sword gag.
Sword gags are a cut above.
Did
we make that joke last time?
No.
Didn't you make a cut above joke about something? We're talking about pies.
I don't remember making that joke, but if you say so.
I think we were talking about razors, beards, things. I listened to our episode from last week.
Groundbreaking.
I listen to all of our episodes all the time.
Okay. That's good that you listened to yourself. What did you think? Do you have any notes for yourself?
No, I mean, it's the same note that I've had before that I keep forgetting. We should do more episodes where we don't talk about a movie because it's fun.
I feel like it's pretty difficult without a topic. However,
we're able to manufacture topics pretty easily.
Yeah. The Department of Tasty Pies, kind of
such a good title,
kind of just built itself. I mean, you came up with the perfect name for that department, and it just ran with it.
We're pies. We're still working on the incorporation for the Department of Tasty Pies, but.
Well, it wouldn't be incorporated. It's part of the government, Dan.
Well, we could start in the private sector.
Well, what you want to do, though, ideally, is to have the Department of Tasty Pies be privatized. So then that way you can get government funding to get paid more than what it would cost for the government to do that same job. And then we could be contractors.
Contractors of the government with regards to Tasty Pies.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's a gig I would sign up for.
Yeah, because that way you get a little extra dough.
Why are you making vampire sounds?
One, two, three. So, anyway. Three for comedy and counting for vampires? Yes. All
that's what you're gonna say. That's you're gonna count down like that before you go face first into the pie to eat the pie.
No, we don't have a pie eating competition. We didn't discuss this. Is that part of our educational program that we're going to offer?
I think the pie eating contest is ostensibly the interview process to work at the Department of Tasty Pies. It's how quickly can you consume this tasty pie.
Well, are we going to have a standard pie or is there going to be a variety of pies and we need to measure people for applying for different jobs with different pies?
You know, I think each person gets a different pie and then they both have to eat it fast. So the fastest person in their particular interview group moves on to the next stage. And in the next stage, they have to answer some very specific questions about the ingredients that they tasted in that tasty pie. And it's even harder because they had to consume it quickly and they had to remember it. So we're really going to find, you know, the cream of the crop and the best pie tasters out there because they're fast and they have a refined palate.
Yes. And we could put cream in the pies and that's how we find the cream of the crop.
Well, the cream is really the people.
yeah. I mean, we're still government contractors. We have to go by some rules, Dan. Let's not get carried away.
Cream is very fine. I mean, you can't just dictate where the cream is found.
Oh, no, of course not. Except the whipped cream. It would kind of be there.
On the pie?
Yeah.
And then, I guess, in the people after that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Nobody got hit in the face with a pie in this movie.
No, I feel like that's more of a silent era thing.
It kept going a little bit after that. Three Stooges kind of stuff.
Yeah. But, like, I feel like the 50s with the Roman era epics and the dance numbers and the swimming aquatic pieces. I don't know how the pie would have fit in with that necessarily.
You don't think A Tale of the Christ could have benefited from some pies in the face?
Probably not. I don't think they could have got that past the review board. But
Romans drank before slaves. He gets up to the front of the line and sees Jesus, and then Jesus just hits him in the face with the pie. Da 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 da. Cut to reel 3.
Yeah. Or you could have had the pies in Lawrence Lorenz's picture.
That would have been some great slapstick. Like, they've got this really upscale, dignified party/dance scene, and then, you know, just there's a music cue, and then everyone breaks out and starts throwing pies at each other.
Yeah, a mirthless pie.
I'm not a fan of. I would want my pie to have some mirth.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you are a fan of the goop.
The goop is okay with me.
The goop is mirth.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. So maybe these are rival divisions within the Department of Tasty Pie. There's the mirth group, and then there's the mirthless group.
Yes.
I handle the pies with mirth, and you handle the mirthless pies.
Yes. That sounds correct. Only, I feel like we should have more divergent names, but I can't think of anything other than Mirth and Mirthless right now. But, yeah.
Well, there's strength in unity, and division in strength, and strength in... Anyway.
Mm. Would that it were so simple.
So the second or third time that we've had that? Because we got to do 3.
Would that it twere so simple.
Would that it were so simple.
Twere. Why do you keep saying it like that?
Do you know Carlotta Valdez is also a song?
No.
It's by Harvey Danger. It's a good song.
Oh, good.
Harvey Danger's a good band.
Okay.
John Roderick played in them for a little bit.
I have heard that.
Mm-hmm. I enjoy the Harvey Danger.
Is that because Danger is your middle name?
No, my middle name's Christopher. Mm.
Good old DC Sturm.
No, that's the German guy that I started following on Twitter.
What? Oh, wait, whoa.
Did you miss that in the Slack?
No, I saw that. You decided to follow a bunch of people that had your name on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I feel like that was something you regretted and stopped doing. But did you not regret that and stop doing that? Are you still doing that? Is this an ongoing thing?
It appears that he's the only one that I continue to follow. Particularly appears. Because I didn't send him a message. I kind of want to send him a message because his name is Daniel Sturm as well. His username is at DC Sturm. And I want to just be like, hey, what's your middle name? Because I think we actually have the same full names, probably.
Does he look like you? Is this a Parent Trap thing?
I mean, he's got one of those, what's that app where everyone sort of cartoonified their faces?
You mean like when the Mad Men thing was that was going around?
No, it was not too long ago. I don't know, there's like 6 filters or whatever. It's a stupid-looking photos app that makes everything look all artsy-fartsy or whatever. Anyway, okay. He's a cake PHP addicted web junkie, according to his bio.
Well,
oh my god, the cake, he's my evil archenemy, because we're the Department of Tasty Pies.
Yes, in the Department of Evil
Tasty
Cakes.
Pies versus cake PHP.
Yeah. And who likes programming in PHP, let's be honest?
I think Marco still does some of that.
Yep, that was part of the joke.
He's in, that's not a joke. He's in Hamburg.
Marco is in New York.
No, I mean the DC Sturm.
Oh, Hamburg, Germany.
Should I tweet him and ask him what his middle name is right now?
You seem to be gravitating towards that, regardless of what my answer might be. So go ahead.
I'm still just staring at his page here.
Okay.
There were other Dan Sterns, but they didn't tweet in English. So
what are you?
How did we get on this? What were we talking about? Why were we talking about this?
Because I called you DC Sturm because your middle name is Christopher, and I said your middle name was Danger because of Harvey Danger, and that I don't remember where that came from. To be perfectly honest with you,
for a lot of Eldest.
That's where it was. He played the Carmen Miranda type actress, according to Wikipedia.
Who's Carmen Miranda again?
She was a very famous singer performer who did sort of a you ever see the Daffy Duck cartoons where he would put on the fruit thing on top of his head
that was like supposed Chiquita Banana Lady kind of thing.
Yeah, that was supposed to be a riff on what her routine was. Yes. So that not that is a good way to describe Carmen Miranda, but she was a Brazilian performer who was mainly famous in the 20s and 30s.
Well, I like this Veronica Osorio lady.
She was good. Like I said, they were cute together. I like their cuteness.
Oh, she's a UCB person out there in the Los Angeles and New York.
Oh.
Improv.
Yeah, I know that.
Performing.
I drove past the Groundlings out here the other day, and I was like, you know what? Maybe I should just quit everything and dedicate my life to
improv.
To improv. I feel like that would go really well.
You would be the first performer to no-and your way to the top.
Yeah. I don't know if I would play well with others. I feel like that might be a problem.
Just a lot of Joe saying, I don't really feel like I want to do that.
Yeah, like, are you serious right now? Like, what? I can't tell if you're joking.
Slap some people, you know, get it together.
Well, I wouldn't slap anyone. Here's the thing that you don't understand, Dan. If you have a good, well-defined, perfect glare, why would you slap anyone? You don't need to. You can slap them with your eyes.
You think your glare is that good?
Yeah.
Using the rolling eye emoji.
You have never squared off mano a mano, eyeball to eyeball with me on this.
Well, it's because you're like 4 inches taller than me.
Well, I try not to make you feel too bad about that, but
6'3" or 6'2"? I can't remember.
6'3".
Okay, so yeah, 4 inches taller than me.
Sorry.
Also, I'd probably just laugh if you glared at me.
This is true. And then you would probably point, and then I would just be flustered by your pointing.
I think I'm probably pretty good at flustering you.
Yes. I would say so. No qualifications needed.
After 137 episodes of this, I've grown into that skill.
Mm-hmm. Matured.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like a fine wine.
Would that it were so simple to fluster Joe.
Yes.
Okay, I think that's three. Comedy!
Banana peel.
Banana peel pie?
Nope. Just somebody would slip on a banana peel now, because we're doing comedy.
They're carrying a pie to the Department of Tasty Pies to be tested for tastiness.
And it's a banana cream pie.
They slip on a peel, it goes flying up in the air, they land on their back, and then plop right in the face.
Yep.
Plop.
Everyone laughs.
It's like a Watchmen quote.
Mm-hmm.
We should probably stop now.
But Doctor, I am Pagliacci. Yeah.
This place looks open!
You!